Welcome to the Aspire podcast, and thanks for stopping by. I'm Randy Hall with Aspire, and our goal at Aspire is to share resources, tools, ideas, and experience with the veterinary community that help owners and managers lead their practice more effectively. And today we are talking with Dr. Brennan Pittard with First Financial Bank. And Brennan, thanks for joining us today. I'd like to let our audience get to know you a little bit. It is kind of unique for a DVM to be engaged in the finance world the way you are. And I would love to just share with our audience a little bit about your journey.
Yeah, Randy. First of all, I really appreciate you having me on your Aspire podcast. I think it's great what you all do, and I'm just honored to be here. I get the question a lot about, you know, you went to veterinary school. How did you end up working for a bank? And it is a unique journey for sure. And just to give a quick overview of how I got here, growing up, my dad always owned a small business, and it was always intriguing to me. I would work in his business when I wasn't in school and taking classes and all. And I would work there weekends, holidays, whenever. And the financial aspect and just the management aspect of a small business always grabbed a hold of me. So I also had a passion for animals. And whenever I went to veterinary school, I went to LSU School of Veterinary Medicine, I immediately got involved with the Veterinary Business Management Association. And that is a group that most all vet schools have a chapter of, and it's also an organization on a national level that tries to help veterinary students engage in the business aspect and help set them up for practice ownership. So I was secretary of my chapter there at LSU second year, and I was vice president third year, and that really, you know, lit a fire under me on the business aspect of practice as well. I graduated from LSU in May of 2016, and I took a job at a small animal veterinary clinic in my hometown of El Dorado, Arkansas, right out of school. I worked there for a year and a half, and I was approached by a bank that's actually based out of my hometown in El Dorado, First Financial Bank, and the CEO of the bank actually happened to be my Sunday school teacher when I was in high school. So
talk about a small world.
Yeah, absolutely. So when they decided to, you know, get into veterinary lending, he contacted me just to get some industry insight. And him and some more people from his team at the bank, we had about a 2-hour Q&A session. And, you know, they had a lot of questions. And, you know, being a year and a half out, I didn't feel like I knew a ton at that point, but apparently they were happy with what I said, and it turned into a job offer. And you know, just I was pretty shocked, but you know, looking at it and really thinking about it, I was like, you know what, this is a great opportunity. I've had a year and a half of practice under my belt. I have an opportunity to go and work for First Financial Bank and help veterinarians, you know, with my practice experience and business knowledge. I can, you know, hopefully help mend the gap between the practice side and financial aspects as far as financing a veterinary practice.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible. One of the things that sticks out a little bit about what you said is just how you sought out those resources, even in veterinary school, around the management piece of things. One of the things I constantly hear, both from deans of veterinary schools and also people that obviously have graduated with DVM degrees, are, hey, I didn't get to learn any of the business aspects, and yet now those skills are just as important for my success as my ability to treat animals and the medicine that I practice. So it's pretty nice to hear, one, that you found those resources and were able to sort of explore them a bit. It sounds like the interest in it sort of led you to maybe spend a little more time with that than some others might when they're in the school process.
Yeah, it sure did. And Randy, you can get so bogged down in the vet school curriculum. Obviously, you know, there's a lot of medicine to learn. There's a lot to learn about animal health, and there's a lot of different animal species out there to learn about. So obviously the business side can definitely get pushed to the very back, and then it's easy to get all the way through that curriculum, and then graduation you're like, well, I'd like to someday own a practice, but you know, I don't know what in the world I would, you know, do or how I get to that point. And you know, I did make it a priority during vet school to go to extracurricular activities and go above and beyond to make sure I did get some business knowledge. And the resources are there. You just have to make the time, and you have to just do it.
That's a really good perspective, because I think a lot of veterinary students get trapped in exactly what you're talking about. Is I don't have time to learn all the stuff I think I need to know to go practice, much less all the stuff about running one. It just feels overwhelming in a way when there's that many rotations and, to your point, that many different species to learn about.
Right, right. It can get very overwhelming, but making the time and making it a priority is something you just have to do if you strive to get into the business side and practice ownership.
Yeah, I love that perspective on it, because I think thinking about what your life is going to be like down the road for people in veterinary school is hard. They can think about the practice side of it, but picturing those bigger opportunities around, you know, leading a team, creating a business, growing an enterprise, you know, those sorts of things feel sort of foreign to them. But it's important, even in the school process, to think more about, where do I want to go with this? Where do I want my DVM degree to take me? Not just, am I qualified to go perform medicine on animals, which alone is pretty daunting. Not being a DVM or a veterinarian, I don't know how people get to that point where they're comfortable just you know, doing all of the things that you guys have to do in practice. So love hearing about your journey and just that unique perspective that you bring to this. So when I talk with veterinarians, and when I consult with them and I work with them and meet them at conferences, I do find that the finances of this thing are one of the most challenging pieces for them. In addition to sort of leading a team and leading a group of people, they also, to your point, probably don't have a great perspective on what it takes to start or run a veterinary practice, especially as we've talked about, for people who have spent most of their life thinking about, you know, animal medicine and how do I deal with a diabetic cat, which is pretty far from how do I finance my practice, right? So what advice do you have for veterinarians who are dealing with those issues or thinking of buying a practice or maybe even expanding the one they have, but clearly might have not spent a lot of time considering the different aspects or the process behind that?
That's a great point, Randy. And you know, I think you kind of you hit it on the head earlier when you mentioned resources. It's all about surrounding yourself with good resources and surrounding yourself with good, like-minded people that will ultimately help you achieve your goal of practice ownership. And I always try to surround myself with people that are smarter than me in that particular area or field of expertise. And, you know, you're not alone in this. I know we talk about with practice ownership, oh, you're gonna have to wear all of these different hats. Your own boss, your own practice manager, your own HR, your own accountant. And essentially you are, because you are the owner of that business. But there are so many resources out there to help you and people that want to help you and help you achieve your goals that it's not all on you. So the main thing I can say there is just surround yourself with a good team of people that can help you get to where you want to be.
That's an excellent point. And I think that thinking about it as how do I build a team to help me get there and really to help all of us sort of achieve maybe what individual goals we have versus how do I power through all of this difficult stuff and somehow survive it, which is how a lot of veterinarians feel. You know, interesting perspective to think about, hey, who could you partner with? Who could you surround yourself with? Who could you talk to? Who could you learn from? And then what's your plan for sort of making that learning and those interactions happen is something that often, you know, we just kind of miss when we're thinking about how to create the future or make it different. I've spoken with a lot of veterinarians that they may still be dealing with student loan debt. I was speaking with a team leader of veterinarians the other day. So she's a veterinarian, she's in a practice, and she's leading the team of veterinarians. You would think about it as maybe a medical director in a lot of practices, but they use different language in this one. And she just, finally celebrated sort of this end of student debt, right? But she's probably been out around 10 years. And so there's, people that may want to think about practice ownership or get into it or consider, what path they might chart, but they kind of feel like, well, until I get rid of this student loan debt, I can't think about any of that. And yet I've watched people do it. So I'm curious from your perspective, what's the difference? What thoughts do you have that might help somebody who's sort of still dealing with the debt thing, but thinking about the future?
Yeah, so I have an interesting perspective here because I went to veterinary school and I am living, with veterinary school student debt. And so I can relate to these veterinarians who are calling me and, saying I'm thinking about practice ownership, but I don't think I can because of my student debt. And, the first thing I usually tell them is just that student debt should not keep you from buying a practice. As far as I'm concerned, you worked very hard to become a veterinarian. And it is very expensive, and it's getting more expensive every year to go to veterinary school. And that is good debt. That is not something that should necessarily keep you from purchasing a practice. If you wait until, your debt is significantly less or even paid off to try to pursue a practice, you could be waiting a good while from, some of the numbers I've seen. So.
Sure.
If your dream is to own a veterinary practice 3 to 5, however many years out of veterinary school, reach out to a lender. Give me a call or any other, a lender that specializes in the veterinary space. And, you may financially, there may be some other reasons why, you may not be ready for practice ownership, but I want to help guide you and steer you to that direction. We can at least come up with a plan on how to get you set up financially to own a practice. But I would not let the student debt necessarily keep you from pursuing that dream.
Yeah, great point. I mean, there are certainly veterinarians who have acquired or bought into practices or started their own that have student debt. So there's ways to do it if you, again, just to your point, surround yourself with some people that can help you figure that out. Really good thought. I think people feel trapped in that debt and just don't even consider that there's alternatives and possibilities. So,
right. And it's easy to feel that way.
But, absolutely. There are. That's right. Anytime you're looking at that bill every month, it's easy to feel sort of crushed under the weight of that thing.
Right. And it's, I've talked to veterinarians that are practice owners or getting ready to retire, and they tell me my vet school was $100 a semester and it blows my mind at how much veterinary school has gone up.
It's true. I mean, just college in general, right? Everything's getting more expensive, and I think veterinary schooling actually is magnified in that regard, because to get into it,
and it doesn't seem that the associate veterinarian's income is not necessarily going up, with the prices of school, as other professions, inflation would increase the salaries as well. Your associate veterinary salary is not necessarily going up as fast as tuition is going up.
That's exactly what I'm seeing as well. And certainly there are individuals that have maybe bucked that trend a bit, but I think as a rule, you're exactly right. We have not seen it increase significantly, and certainly not at the same rate that the costs for school are. So it's a tough situation, right? And so if somebody is actively saying, okay, whether I've got debt or not, but I'm going to move through that, and I'm looking to find a practice to purchase, I want to go buy my own thing. Maybe where I am, doesn't have those opportunities outlined well for me, or I don't see my future in my current practice, but I'd love to go either buy or start my own. What would you think of as the first steps for somebody with that in mind?
Well, if you're looking to purchase an existing practice, and you know you're not too concerned with location, you're looking on more of a broad level, you just want to find the right practice, you know, look at different state veterinary medical association websites. A lot of times they'll have classified sections with practices for sale. Other good resources are reaching out to practice brokers. They usually, you know, have quite a few on their list that they're trying to sell for doctors getting ready to retire. And another point, if you know where you want to go, you know, you have it narrowed down to a pretty tight radius of, I want to live in this area, and there's not necessarily a practice for sale there, just pick up the phone and start calling some veterinarians or go visit some clinics, because I've heard of, you know, some practice transactions that, you know, the veterinarian was not even planning on selling the practice. He was approached and, you know, said, why not? It's, you know, I'm almost retirement age. I have somebody that's here and ready for the opportunity. What if I don't sell it to them and then I never have another chance to sell my practice. So, reaching out to veterinarians in an area that, you know, you would like to be in is never a bad idea, and an opportunity may come up that you never expected.
Yeah, that's a really great point. I know so many practice owners that are struggling a bit thinking about their exit strategy, and certainly, you know, corporate veterinary medicine and its growth has maybe changed that perspective a bit, but a lot of owners, you know, are thinking about, I'd like to exit at some point and enjoy the fruits of my labor a bit, and yet they don't have a plan for that. And so when someone comes up that might represent a plan for that, it creates a whole different train of thought around, hey, maybe now's the time, and maybe this is the way, and maybe there's a transition that we can work out together that allows me to do this. But most veterinary practice owners that I've met don't really have a clear exit strategy in place, which means they might be looking for one. So that point about just starting some conversations in a place that you think geographically works for you is a really good idea.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And, you know, if nothing comes up in that area that, you know, you want to practice in and live in, hire a consultant and y'all go through that area and see if the area can support another veterinary hospital. You know, that's, you want to make sure you may be very passionate about being in that area and really wanting to settle down there, but you also need to make sure that it will support another veterinarian and,
right,
you know, move forward from that.
Yeah, really good advice, just to think about, where's my best location for the future of my business in addition to one that's comfortable for me. The other thing that I've learned, I guess, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, is that even if the people that you're speaking with maybe don't want to sell their practice, or they aren't at a place where they're considering that, the veterinary community is typically very small, especially in any sort of geographical location. So they may know someone who does, and they're usually happy to say, look, I'm not thinking about it at this point, but you know what? I know this veterinarian across town who might be, and hope you sort of continue that process through some additional conversations.
Yeah, and I get calls too, Randy, of not only veterinarians want to buy a practice, but I get calls from practice owners that say, hey, if you know anybody looking in this area, my practice is for sale. They may not have it listed heavily with a broker, but you know, they're using their contact list. And like you said, the veterinary community is small. I could very well have a practice owner call me one day and tell, you know, give me the location, tell me his practice is for sale if I know of anybody. And a week later, I could very well have somebody call that's looking in that area. So the community is small, and, you know, you have to use your resources and network.
Yeah, excellent point. And just building relationships with people in the space, right? That do what you do and have the interactions, the connections, and the knowledge that you have. Really
Right.
good point. What about that practice owner who would, like to think about maybe bringing their associates into the ownership of their practice or thinking about that exit strategy for themselves? Any advice there or thoughts about what someone should be thinking about as they consider maybe their future beyond practice and how to navigate that?
I think junior partnerships are a great idea. They're a win-win, I believe, for the practice owner as well as the junior partner. And it gives the owner a good chance to groom someone to learn that practice, and it makes it a lot easier for the clients to transition to that new veterinarian because it's typically over years' time. So, or a few years of time. So it gives the clients a chance to meet that new junior veterinarian and, gives the associate a great chance to set themselves up for the most success. Now, it could be, I guess, an associate that was already there and they're obviously already in tune with the practice and the clientele. So in that aspect, I think it works out well also.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think a lot of owners are worried about sort of what's going to happen to my practice after I leave it, right? Are my clients still going to be taken care of? Is the level of care going to still be what I would want, my legacy to be? Or, it's a different kind of train of thought. And if they've got somebody in there that they can think about junior partnership with, then they have some degree of confidence in that other exit strategies may not lend themselves to.
Right. And my biggest piece of advice there is for the owner and the associate or potential junior partner, get everything lined out up front as far as a contract and, have realistic expectations for each party as to when the, final transition may occur or, how much they're going to buy in at different points. And the seller also needs to think too if he plans to does he plan to finance part of this transaction, or should the junior partner reach out to a lender to help with the financial aspect?
Yeah, excellent point that I think most people probably would just have to figure out as they went versus talking with someone like yourself that can say, okay, here's a couple of different strategies and here's how they would work and here's what the moving parts are associated with each.
Right. And having clear expectations set on the front end is a big thing because you hear, veterinarian, we're a very trusted profession, but some things will get lost in translation on, just a handshake deal. So just have clear expectations ironed out.
Yeah, excellent point. A lot of us kind of hate contracts. We think a handshake ought to be sufficient, and
Yeah.
sometimes it is. But when we're thinking about this big of a chunk of everybody's future, it's better to have a few things written down.
Sure.
Lawyers like that too. So,
Yeah.
how does a practice go about finding the right partner to help them through all of this? I mean, what strikes me, at least even from our conversation here today, is that you've got a ton of sort of experience, a different outlook, a set of knowledge that isn't readily available out there. And I'm just wondering if veterinarians are saying, hey, I've got to build this team around me. I've got to create partners and resources that set me up for success, no matter what my future looks like. And one of them might be in the financial arena, somebody that understands how to execute these kinds of things and how to guide me through this kind of process. How do they start that? What should they look for? I mean, people can always go to Google and say, hey, banks that lend to veterinarians or financial advisors that work in the veterinary, we can do that. But is there another way or is there a better way? How do people sort of go to find the right partners?
Yeah, and I think that all goes back to building that network and remembering who that was and came and spoke to you in school or who you met at that trade show. It all comes back to your network and look, ask other people in the field who maybe just bought a practice or just went through the process and ask their advice. You know, you're right, Randy. You can do a Google search and 10 banks come up.
Right.
You know, we offer veterinary financing, and you know, it is a little difficult sometimes to filter through and find the right partner for you. And it's going to be different for everybody. I tell veterinarians all the time. I say, you know, we work hard for you, but you know, we may not necessarily be the best fit for everyone. You know, we try to be, and we do everything we can, and we offer a high touch customer service model. And obviously, we have a veterinarian and myself on staff here to help through the process. So, you know, but just finding that network, and you know, remembering back to you know, those relationships, and asking around as to, you know, where what step you should take next, and where to go to find the right partner.
Yeah, that's a good point. Just that concept of having a veterinarian who works for a bank and can help guide through that alone feels like it's exceptionally unique, Brennan.
Yeah,
That
it is. And you know, I a
would
lot of times I'm the first phone call, and sometimes I'm the last phone call. Hey, we need to close on this yesterday. We've already got the team built, but I like being the first phone call, because I really do feel like I can you know, add benefit to, you know, helping through the process of building a team, helping them network with other people to help themselves be successful.
Yeah, that's awesome. And just approaching it with the background of understanding veterinary medicine like you do probably just allows you to have a different level of kind of compassion and empathy for the people that you're working with, understanding their world in a way that probably most banks can't.
It does, and I really enjoy it, because you know, if I'm on the phone with somebody talking about a practice purchase, half of that phone call is usually just talking shop. Hey, let's, you know, what are you doing now? What kind of practice are you in? What ideas do you have? What are you going to bring to this practice? How are you going to change it? It's a lot of fun for me to get to go into that aspect of things as well.
That's pretty cool. Still get to use sort of both of your passions here for business and for animals and veterinary medicine.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, what other financial advice do you have? There's so many moving parts, aspects of finances, whether you're running a practice or whether you want to buy another one or buy into the one you're in. Any other things that you would say? Here's a couple of nuggets for people that are trying to successfully navigate all of the money challenges associated with veterinary practice ownership.
Yeah, again, surround yourself with good, like-minded people. Build a good network, build a good team, and let others help you be successful. Like I mentioned earlier, you don't, you know, as a practice owner, you wear a lot of different hats, but you don't have to do everything. You can
Right.
surround yourself with good people to help you with those things. Don't be afraid to reach out and start asking questions early on. One of my favorite things to do is go talk to veterinary students. I was out at Georgia Vet School a couple weeks ago, and they just, you know, they ask a lot of really good questions, and
Yeah.
they're not necessarily things I look back and I'm like, what, man, would I have known that, or would I have thought to even ask that when I was
Those
in
are some.
veterinary school? So it's pretty amazing that you know, and they're pretty hungry for business information,
Yeah.
and the profession is looking very promising from a business side. I was very impressed whenever I went and spoke with them on the questions that they have.
Yeah, I do see in newly graduated veterinarians and veterinary students more of a hunger to learn earlier. In their career, some of the things we've talked about and some of those challenges associated with running a practice, I do see a little bit more of an appetite for it now, even though I know veterinary schools are struggling with where to fit it in and how to get it to them. So I agree with you that it's a great crop of students coming through, and hopefully the profession is in great hands.
Right, for sure. And another point is just, you know, overcoming the fear of owning a practice. It is a very, very scary thing to think about, and it's, you know, one of your biggest decisions you can make in your career. But you know, once you get into that ownership role, and you know, a lot of the veterinarians that I talk to that are going through the process of purchasing a practice, you know, always ask, you know, why are you doing this, and you know, what made you to decide to go ahead and pursue it? And usually they're, you know, it's, I don't really know. I just know I want to own a practice, and you know, I was fearful at first, but I'm ready. I just want to do it, and I want to get going. So I don't think you're ever truly going to be ready for ownership, but crossing over and getting over that fear and pursuing it, pursuing maybe a dream that you've had for a long time, is really going to help. And you know, the resources on the other end, like I mentioned, are there. And Randy, you're a great example of that with Aspire. What you all do for the profession is magnificent.
Well, I appreciate that, Brendan. We're just getting started, and I think you and I are of the exact same mindset of how do we bring some of these tools, the support, these ideas, these thoughts, these possibilities, really, to the profession in a way that maybe hasn't happened consistently yet, and also in a way that most practice owners and practice managers and other people are looking for. Just how do we help? And that's sort of what I think, you know, as I listen to you talk, I think we're very similar in that way. It's we want to provide that support, and we're just trying to help find ways to just help people manage these set of challenges, which are huge for them on a daily basis, and create the kind of practice that they want, the kind of future that they want. These things connect very well in that regard, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's promising to have people like you out there in your, you know, your Aspire business to help with these things.
Well, thank you very much. We appreciate that. We're looking forward to growing it and sharing it with the entire veterinary community. And Brendan, let people know too how to get a hold of you, what they would do if they wanted to have a further conversation with you, or just kick a few of these ideas around maybe a little bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. You can go to our website at www.ffb1.com and go to our veterinary lending section. And we have some very valuable resources there. One example is, you know, how to write a business plan. You know, there's resources there, and then my contact information is there as well. Feel free to reach out to me, whether you're in veterinary school, you're a year out, you're 10 years out, wherever you are in the process, you know, even if you don't plan on buying for another 4 or 5 years, feel free to reach out, and I would love to talk with you early on and help you achieve your goals.
Yeah, that's it. Build that relationship early so that it's there when you need it versus scrambling around and looking for it when it's time to buy or when you've decided that you want to do something different financially.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good. Well, Brendan, thanks for joining us today. I really appreciate having you. It's really interesting to just hear the partnership that you approach these relationships with. I think, you know, we need more of that in the veterinary community, just opportunities to find these resources that can work with you and help you achieve your goals. And so I feel like we're very much aligned on that and glad to be connected with you.
Yeah, thank you, Randy. I really appreciate you having me on your podcast, and I appreciate everything you all do for the profession.
Well, we're looking to continue to partner with people like yourself to do more of it, and we're excited for that. And so for more information about Aspire, please go to aspirevet.com and learn how we can continue to support you as you lead and manage your practice and create the future that you want. For now, I'm Randy Hall with Aspire, and we'll talk to you again soon.